Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 7th of September, recording at 9:06 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. The stock market rally continued at the beginning of the week, but over the last 3 days, we've seen that pared back somewhat, including some fairly hefty selling in Europe and the USA here today. And the rally in long-dated government bonds hesitated briefly, but then picked up here again, in line with the stock market weakness that we've seen towards the latter part of the week. And in currencies, big story is dollar weakness. And that's pretty much across the boards. The dollar index, as I speak, is at 79.97, so back underneath that psychological 80 level, that historic support that it continues to pressure. And it's been a magnificent week for gold, although gains were pegged back somewhat here today. But bullion, as I speak, is trading, there's some after hours trading going on, but it's at $700.40. That's up five. It had been up as high as 706.79, and we also saw some modest gains in silver and platinum in here today. Industrial metals were a little bit weaker. They've been quite mixed recently, mixed to a bit soft. And the wheat-led grain and bean complex rally hesitated, faltered a little bit yesterday. Well, hesitated is a better description of it, but surged again here today. That's really quite interesting. I haven't had a look at all the soft commodities because I've been writing too much important copy. That's my excuse at any rate, and you can be the judge as to whether or not it's important or not. But I also noticed that we had gains in coffee in the U.S. and that lumber was down. Oil was up a little bit. Oil's had a firm week. Natural gas has not. And the spread between the price of natural gas and crude oil, you can see that in the chart library, is out at a quite extreme level. I suspect there'll be an arbitrage opportunity there at some point. Okay. So what's going on here in terms of the big picture? Well, we are still very much within this medium-term stock market correction. Now, this is a correction. I need to qualify that because it's certainly a correction for the European stock markets, for the North American, for the U.S. stock market at any rate. And we have seen some quite sharp reactions, sometimes on the scale of what we had seen in the 2006 medium-term correction that occurred in May and June of that last year. This one's likely to last longer. It may not necessarily be deeper. And when I say I have to qualify my comment in talking about a correction, all markets are not doing the same thing, to my relief, and no doubt those of some of the rest of you. For instance, the China sector has been hitting new highs recently. The China A-share market never blinked. The Hang Seng index did, but then moved up to new high ground. And so did the China A-share index. India pushed back up within sight of its highs. Shakeouts in the rest of the Asian markets and also the resources markets were either small or where they were sharp, they were quickly reversed. With this close on Wall Street and the disappointing employment figures that helped to push Wall Street down may well weigh on some of those markets on Monday morning. But basically, we're seeing a two-tier structure here, where Europe is generally weak, not entirely. For instance, Finland reached a new high for the year today. It probably didn't hold it at the close, but it did touch a new high. It's a rather impressive performance. It's a thin market, and I think that's due mainly to Nokia, which is a huge weighting in the index, and is on a roll. So that's an interesting theme. Some of the tech and telecoms are coming back into form, or have come back into form in a rather big way. Now, the problem, and it's a big one, is in the banking sector. Again, it's not global, but it certainly involves the US and European banks, and it also very much involves the Japanese banks. And you can just go through a chart library, and where banks are underperforming, that's a market that's got big question marks hanging over its head. I've always regarded banks, well, lots of people always regard banks as a lead indicator. They're a very important lead indicator. I worried about, and Owen and I pointed out, the weakness of banks before this correction hit the broader indices. A number of those banking shares had been sliding since February. They were classically weak in Japan at a time when Topics and the Nikkei were testing their broad range highs, where they failed, as you know. But in some countries, mainly Asian countries and some of the resources producers, banks are doing very well. They're at least matching the index and still giving a positive lead. So we do definitely see some uncoupling here overall. Looking at the North American banking sector, we've got Citigroup, which is down pressuring its lows. That's not a healthy environment overall, needless to say. And I think we have to be prepared here for a fairly choppy environment. When there is a correction and a fundamental scare, which almost invariably involves uncertainty, and we have this uncertainty caused by the valuation concerns and liquidity concerns related to all of the securitized debt obligations. That obviously preys on investors' nerves. Markets don't like uncertainty. And it means that even if markets have bottomed, that you get a longer convalescence before they can strengthen once again. Now, let me indulge in a little analytical guesswork in terms of what's going to happen here. My hunch, and I've written about this today, I haven't posted it yet, but I will shortly. My hunch is that the Fed is part willingly and part being bundled into a classic reflation effort. And I think that's the right thing to do. I don't want to get bogged down on the merits of whether we're just stoking up bigger problems for the distant future rather than doing a sensible thing here at the time. I think it's sensible. I wrote about this subject yesterday. So I'll just tell you what I think is going to happen here. I think we will get a classic reflationary effort. I think that the Fed will bail out the banks through the yield curve. How will it do that? And it's certainly done that on many times in the past. It's done that just about whenever banks have gotten into trouble. And what it will do is to slash incrementally the federal funds rate. And really, it will create a situation where, and also the discount rate, where banks can borrow from the Fed and pump that money into the bond market, knowing that they've got the Fed on their side. They leverage up those trades. And so basically what's going to happen here, I think, is that the Fed will bail out the banking sector at the taxpayers' expense. Say it happens over and over and over again when we have financial crises and banks get in trouble. The last time that happened was prior to the and during the last recession that we saw in 2000, 2001, and was it 2002? I think it extended into 2002. So that's what I think we're going to actually see. What will that mean for long-dated government bond markets? Well, it'll keep them quite firm overall. They may not appreciate all that much more. Back in 2000, 2001, 2002, the long-dated government bonds were still in a secular bull market. I maintain that they've been in a secular bear market since the blow-off peaks for bond prices, accelerations downwards for long-dated government bond yields in June 2003. That's when JGB yields briefly got below half of 1%, as you may recall. Now, I think, though, that the bond market will certainly stay steady during the duration of this of this crisis, and that would suit would certainly suit the Fed to see that steady, slightly appreciating in terms of government bond prices market, enabling the banks to recapitalize themselves to the extent that they need to, and that extent is unknown at this stage. Now, what would be the implications of that? It should help to cushion downside risk in stock markets, and it might once it and I think it might also signal an environment where other central banks are far less likely to increase interest rates, the ECB, in other words, and may even go in the other direction and announce that they're moving to neutral policy or perhaps even an easing policy. They don't know at this stage what they're going to do yet any more than I do, but they'll be influenced by what happens in the markets and in the economy, and some slowdown here is pretty well inevitable. But the Fed and the White House, I think particularly the White House, I think, which is driving the Fed here in this, or at least driving those portions of the Fed that may be resisting a classic reflation at this time. The White House is worried, and understandably so, and during a pre-election year, they're going to be even more worried. And we're not going to hear any protests from the Democrats, or very few at any rate. And Democrats will align themselves with beleaguered householders and favor the stimulative measures. So that should keep the long-dated government bond markets steady and help other credit markets to improve over time. And it should cushion downward risk for stock markets. And best case scenario, and this is a realistic best case scenario, we get through the wobbly September period, and that sets up a reasonable year-end rally to get markets back on the upside in what is normally a pretty good third year of the U.S. presidential cycle year. Now, it certainly started off that way and remained that way until getting into trouble, oh, back from June, really June onwards, and earlier, of course, with the with the banks. And what other implications would there be for markets? Well, in terms of winners and losers overall, I think it's much as we've been discussing all along, that we will see the global economic expansion continue, the synchronized, I should say, the synchronized global economic expansion continue, albeit at a somewhat slower rate, slowed by the US and slowed by Europe, which acts as a slight drag on the Asian markets, but consumption demand ought to be sufficiently robust there. Infrastructure demand, ditto. And if the US avoids a recession, as I suspect will be the case, just then there will still be a reasonable, albeit less, consumption. In other words, fewer imports flowing into the US, but not, certainly not going to dry up entirely. And so that we get the global economic expansion continuing, albeit at a slower rate, which means that we get profit, the rate of growth in corporate profits slowing somewhat, but then we also get the headwind of rising interest rates backing off. So that gets replaced by a neutral stance or even rate cuts. And we probably get some P/E ratio expansion in the beleaguered markets of the US and probably Europe during the fourth quarter of the year. That's kind of what I envisage. But whatever happens, whether that's right on the money, too optimistic or too pessimistic, whatever happens, I do expect the resources sectors, the global infrastructure story, and particularly Asia, to outperform more often than not. Now, what about other markets? The bailout of the banks that I've described means lower interest rates, remove in the US, removing one of the props for the US dollar. And I think the US definitely needs and wants a weaker US dollar, and it can't say so publicly, of course, say the opposite. But that's what it looks like we're going to actually get in here. I've felt this for a long time, so this is not a new view, as you know. And that will, of course, help the US economy somewhat, provided it's a ranging decline in the US dollar. Now, the problem would arise if the US dollar were to go into an accelerated decline. Now, that's one of the, well, veteran subscribers, and well, anybody who was a subscriber in the first half of the year will also recall me mentioning this repeatedly when I talked about three factors that would really concern me in terms of global stock markets. When I say really concern me, I mean opening the door for a bear market or a severe correction, rather than what's still a pretty modest correction overall. And most of these stock markets have some breathing space here between current levels and their August reaction lows. One of the items highest on the list, well, there were two of them in pretty much joint equal order, and those were spikes in long-dated government bond yields. So that's not happening. We did get that happening a little earlier in the year, and it led to a reaction, contributed to a reaction. It also contributed to, or caused the 2006 correction that we saw, May-June correction that I referred to earlier on. But we're not going to get any spike in long-dated government bond yields against this current background, that's for sure. Now, the other factor that I've mentioned that would really, so that's it would take bonds as a generally benign, favorable environment, actually a tailwind, moving from a headwind to a tailwind overall for stock markets. The other factor that I was concerned about was if we saw the dollar go into some sort of free fall, because that would look like a crisis and represent a crisis for some. Now, is that going to happen? Well, I don't know any more than anybody else, but it could. It certainly could happen. I wrote a couple of months ago or more about the big breakouts that we'd seen by a number of currencies, and not all of those breakouts have been maintained in some of those quite volatile resources currencies, but the overall trend here is very clear. You can see it very clearly in the US dollar index. Now, if we were to see a dramatically weak dollar, that would be very bearish for stock markets, and it would paint the Fed into a corner. Now, it's a possibility. I wouldn't put it at more than, I hate to guess at figures, and I'm really, this is pulling it out of a hat, but I would say maybe there's a 25% risk that the dollar does go into some sort of free fall. If not sooner or later. Now, if that were to happen, as I say, it would be bearish for stock markets. So now, obviously, it's very much in the interests of central banks, to all central banks, to prevent that from happening. No central bank would benefit from a rapid decline in the U.S. dollar, fanning crisis fears. But it might require multilateral intervention at some point. I think it will at some point, whether it's this year or next year or the year after or whatever. I don't know. But I think it will require a multilateral intervention at some point to prevent a downward acceleration by the US dollar. Meanwhile, the odds are heavily in favor of a ranging decline in the dollar. With central banks trying to steady the action overall without going to the very rare and more dramatic, taking the rather the more dramatic and very rare step of multilateral intervention to support the dollar, but the gently declining dollar would be favorable for the U.S. economy, favorable for the US stock market. It would not be that negative, really, for other stock markets as long as it was a gradual decline overall. It would only be a modest headwind, perhaps, for Europe, if that. It would be quite bullish for gold. And gold has shown some real strength in here in the last week, as I mentioned before, and as you are no doubt aware. And I think in the fashion game of international investments, gold is coming back into favor. We see that in the gold shares, we see that in the gold price, and we're beginning to see it in the other precious metals as well. So I would not, I've looked for a breakout above $700 coming certainly before year end. 2007, and it definitely looks to me like we're getting that, and that could be a good self-feeding move. Now, is that going to worry the central banks? I don't think so. Not this side of 800. We'll see, but I doubt it. But at any rate, we could see quite a useful move on the upside in precious metals. And I'm a little bit positioned in that direction in terms of my investment account and also my trading account. I would be focusing on gearing that up a lot more in my trading account, were I not going to be away next week. But we're not talking about a 1 week move in here. We're talking about a move that could last, if I'm right in my forecast, well into the new year. Now, what else to mention? Crude oil, pretty firm in here overall. We may see a fashion switch where precious metals do better, and industrial commodities, which have been such stellar performers for such a long time, actually underperform a little bit. That doesn't mean that they'd be ending their overall secular bull markets, but it does mean that we would see more ranging phases, extension of the current medium-term corrections where we're seeing them, and we're seeing them in from zinc to from nickel to zinc, I should say. So we could see a little bit more of that ranging activity as some of the speculative money, which can make a meaningful short to medium term difference at the margins, as some of the speculative money is, say, moves away from the industrial commodity sector and towards the precious metal sector. That wouldn't surprise me at all. Now, as far as the underlying demand is concerned for these industrial commodities, I expect it to remain very, very strong. And I don't think that the global infrastructure story, for instance, is something that's going to be shaken or significantly delayed by subprime problems in the US. And will it have some temporary impact? Sure. But I don't think it's a big story relative to that global infrastructure development. Now, the agricultural commodities, which can be frustratingly difficult to trade, they really are very, very whippy. But we're seeing this wheat-led move on the upside right now. Now, Owen mentioned something very interesting to me today that he had thought through, and I think he had also received something along these lines, stimulating that thought process. But that what are the implications of this wheat move for the other grains? Well, let's look back at a little bit of history first, and what we saw last year was all the talk about corn, how there was not going to be much corn, and so much was going to be used by ethanol production, and so on. Everybody was focusing on corn. So, what happened? Corn prices went up. The farmers then naturally decided that they were just going to plant more and more corn, and so to do that, they swung acreage away from other crops where they could, such as wheat and wheat in particular, I should say. And then there were some weather problems that affected wheat. So wheat is rocketed, and that's getting into wheat. Wheat's reached a level where substitution in terms of switching from wheat to corn by farmers is becoming an increasingly, if not attractive, necessary switch on a costs basis. So, what the point that, and this is was very much Owen's point, but I completely agree with it. I just hadn't crossed my mind until he mentioned it. The point was that because wheat is so strong this year, that we can expect in the next crops, farmers are going to plant a whole lot more wheat, which means that the next cycles, and we're talking about a number of months out, runners are likely to be corn or soybeans, or perhaps both. Interesting. Interesting. Meanwhile, the background in terms of global stockpiles for these commodities, particularly wheat, is very, very low indeed. So that is feeding a little bit of agricultural food price inflation. But it's there's a mixed picture here overall. Some of those meat prices have been very weak because farmers, seeing the rising costs of food, push animals into the slaughterhouses a little bit earlier. But then again, that sets up some shortages in that area. But this would be an ongoing story. So I've said enough about it at this stage. So quick wrap here. Right now, I expect the bond market to remain reasonably steady, while the subprime government bond market, that is, to remain reasonably steady. Appreciate a little further while the subprime concerns remain so high. I'm looking for a classic reflation from the Fed bailing out the banks through the yield curve that will cushion downside in stock markets somewhat, but expect some fairly choppy action overall. The best stories, certainly on the medium and longer term, if not the short term, I think will remain a global infrastructure and also the Asian global infrastructure through the resources and the Asian story. And gold and other precious metals moving from out of favor back into favor. The pendulum is now in motion and heading in the opposite direction from what people had become accustomed to over the last many months. And foods, well, we can expect some further gains here, I think, in this grain and bean complex. It doesn't look over yet, although wheat has recently commenced an acceleration, as you know. Oil, I expect it to remain relatively steady overall. I expect a quieter, somewhat softer performance temporarily by a number of the other industrial commodities, though. And that's pretty much it for another week. I'm away next week, but that'll be my last break for quite some time, I think through nearly the end of the year. So Owen will be in the hot seat and no doubt doing another splendid job on your behalf. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.